I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting from the UAE all around the world on the day the UN Security Council debates promoting and strengthening the rule of law. That's amidst a continuing genocide here in the Middle East, brutal proxy war on Russia through Ukraine, and the prospects of a US war on NATO via Greenland and a NATO-backed Israeli invasion of Iran. Oh, and all that in the context of a year that began with the USA kidnapping the President and First Lady of the country with the largest known oil reserves, Nicolás Maduro, and Celia Flores of Venezuela, now incarcerated in New York. What will the UN Security Council debate when it comes to international law? And today's debate follows a bizarre elite gathering in Switzerland, where oligarchs of countries around the world, as well as David Beckham, gathered while the world burned. GNS Economics is a Helsinki-based consultancy that's published its economic and geopolitical forecast for this year. Its CEO, the Helsinki University scholar Professor Tuomas Malinen, joins me now from the Finnish capital. Professor, thanks so much for coming on. It's actually also 25 years since the Gujarat earthquake. Nearly 200,000 were killed or wounded, but I know your forecast focuses more less on the outliers and more on the threat of nuclear war, I suppose, but also along with outliers. Your forecast predicts the failure for Trump in the Ukraine peace attempts. Why?
Well, it has been our forecast for about a year. So when Trump took the office, we kind of envisaged, based on his selection of his cabinet, that there is a high likelihood that he will fail in pursuing for peace in Ukraine. And currently we think that it's the actually the neocon faction in the Trump administration, which is basically hindering the steps towards peace in Ukraine, because they seek for a peace that is not really a peace for Russia and Ukraine, but just, you know, a ceasefire.
And what gives Ratcliffe and Rubio that power, the head of the CIA and the Secretary of State, over Trump? What gives them that power? Epstein.
Well, that's a very good question. You know, that we could debate that for the whole 30 minutes without knowing, but it has been so since about the 60s, 1960s, when CIA took over of foreign policy, in a sense. So everybody who thinks that Trump will be this kind of savior of everything, they need to understand that the foreign policy doctrine of the US is decades old, and there is a certain apparatus, a structure which pushes for it, regardless of who is the president.
Yeah, I mean, were you surprised that there were reports in the past few days that J.D. Vance, who one thought of as less deep state, presumably, than Ratcliffe at the CIA, backed a bombing of Iran because of red lines had been crossed?
Well, you know, there is these certain MAGA accounts have been making the argument that something changed in the Trump administration between April and May. We don't know what it is, but you see a certain shift in their policies. With, for example, there was like this big brawl between President Zelensky and President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance on the 28th of February, which many thought that this will be the phase after which the U.S. retreats from Ukraine. But instead, they just made a mineral deal, basically, and continued to support Ukraine and to fight in Ukraine. And this is the destabilization of Europe and stopping the Eurasian alliance of forming between China, Russia, and Europe has been a long-standing aim of the deep state or the neocon faction of U.S. government.
Yeah, I mean, there were the old days when people talked about Kremlinology, people couldn't understand Moscow's position, people couldn't understand China's position. More often than not. But here we are just talking about various individuals, oligarchs within the United States administration, so that some pro-MAGA people thought, yes, Trump's threat for Greenland is actually about solving the proxy war in Europe, in Ukraine, so that it would divide the situation and it would also prevent what was thought of as an imminent attack on Iran, which might have already happened by the time this is broadcast.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Like I said, many are thinking that President Trump is this kind of savior. But I think what comes to Greenland, there is a certain threshold passed in the Pentagon, considering a threat of China and Russia, whatever it is, in the Arctic. And then they just want to find a president who decided to act upon it. Like he said himself, I'm a real estate developer, and there looks to be a big chunk of land. This is his actual words. And with the piece of land, he of course means Greenland. And this is like, I don't think the NATO is going to break to this. It's of course possible, but unlikely, because NATO is doing the sowing of the US deep state. And they don't want it gone. And I don't think they allow Trump to make it gone. And just to remind everyone that John F. Kennedy tried to end the rule of CIA, and it ended how it ended. The power of the deep state in the US should not be underestimated.
So there's an intersection of desire here, because Trump can do the biggest real estate deal, and that deep state, which presumably would have wanted the Greenland deal to have manifested itself in a very different way, to not look as if it was imperialist. They could have done it using soft power, softening up Western European publics to the idea that Danish sovereignty didn't mean a damn.
I think if you look at what President Trump said on Wednesday in Davos, it's still in play. He said that they will not use military force in Greenland.
That's what he said about Iran.
Really spoke. Oh, well, yeah, that's true. But I hope these are two different entities for him. So, but I'm thinking that there is still this soft approach going into Greenland. But I also read reports of U.S. preparing military action by deploying the Arctic Angels, I think it was, the troop that is trained in Alaska to Minnesota, and they are not there for riots. So some geopolitical analysts say that they are there in preparation. If all else fails, they will go to Greenland, and then we would be in a completely uncharted waters in everything, basically. But we have to just wait and see what comes. But President Trump seems determined of getting Greenland.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Walz of Minnesota arguably probably thinks the 11th Airborne is actually meant for him. You never really know, do you? I mean, you're in Finland, of course, so you can see the propaganda since Russia moved to protect Donbass, the way Russia sees it, after the provocations of NATO expansion. Any preparations in Finland under the jurisdiction of Ursula von der Leyen and Kaja Kallas, who clearly appear to tell their publics every day that Moscow's about to, I don't know, drive tanks into Paris, probably via Helsinki.
Well, looking from Finland, they are mere puppets. Here, as we signed the DCA, that's the Defensive Cooperation Agreement with the US in 2020. Well, anyway, right after we joined NATO, or we were ascended as the full member of NATO in April 2023. So we rented these 15 military bases to US, and there is massive construction going on there. It's not really talked about in the media, but you people who live near these bases tell stories what they see and hear, and how it looks. For example, Jyväskylä-Tikkakoski, which is quite close to central Finland, it looks to become the NATO airbase hub in the Nordics. So these are like preparations ongoing, and I don't see any point of this massive militarization of Finland unless there is a sinister aim behind it. So there are still bits and pieces they don't fit into place in my narrative yet or my thinking, but there is definitely a military preparation going on in Finland which none of us alive have seen before.
Well, we saw Russia fail repeatedly over the past decade or so to comprehend the threat against it. going in for the Minsk Accords, charades like that, as NATO armed Ukraine to the hilt. Is Russia making a big mistake in not understanding what you're talking about? Or do you think Russia are prepared on the border there? Tell us about the border and the length of this border, by the way. Because again, these ideas of Finland...
1,340 kilometers. It's a very long border. And it has been used in Operation Barbarossa in 1941 when the Wehrmacht troops attacked Russia from the north. So technically, we were the aggressive party back then. But
you were Nazis, I think. I seem to remember.
There was some sympathizing for that. But we really didn't have a choice, honestly. So we just had to choose between Stalin and Hitler, and I still think we made the right choice. But what comes to Kremlin, I don't think they misread the threat. There was very little they could do on the expansion of NATO, for example. You know, they didn't have the means to respond. They just watched it go on. But there was a definite red lines, which many pro-NATO enlargement political scholars draw around Ukraine and Georgia. And one can even think that the war in Georgia in August 2008 was a test of NATO leadership, how Russia will respond when pushed over the red line. And then they applied it a few years later, what they have learned in Ukraine, to basically dismantle the Eurasian alliance between Europe, China, and Russia. So that's kind of my general thinking at the moment. But I don't think what you ask, I don't think Russia misread the threat. There was just nothing the Kremlin could have done.
And what is the scale of the American troop numbers amassing in Finland? Obviously, the MAGA base in the United States know nothing about this as the inner cities of America decay for lack of funding. I mean, is it on the scale of the bases in Britain and Germany?
It's classified. We don't know.
Well, Professor Trond Malinen,
there's this vague comments that from our military leadership, but there is a strong presence at the moment. Who knows what it is?
But, Professor Malinen, yeah. I'll stop you there. More from the GNS Economics CEO after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Helsinki, Professor Tuomas Malinen. Professor, we were talking about Trump and people not really comprehending how under pressure he is from the so-called deep state. Your GNS forecast does cast a shadow over the European credit worthiness. Tell me why you're concerned about the wider Western European banking crisis as being triggered from Germany and Italy?
Well, this has been a concern for over a decade, basically, because the cleanup after the 2008 financial crisis didn't really happen in Europe. All the bad assets remained in the balance sheet of European banks, and they have been hidden in various ways, but the collapse of the Venerables Credit Suisse in March 2023 kind of showed where the European banking sector actually is. But this is not just a European problem, it's also the problem of the US. But in Europe, we have a kind of a twist here, which is that we don't actually know how much loans the European banks have provided to Ukraine, but some estimated it to be a large sum. And if Ukraine would fail, it could cause more problems in the European banking sector. But I would say that the whole Western banking system is kind of closing in on a cliff, which the approaching recession could, you know, push the banking sector over and lead a banking crisis.
Was it some kind of War Powers Act that permitted this lack of transparency? They don't even know how much Western European billions are in the hands of dictator Zelensky?
No. Well, basically, European banking sector, generally banking is a black box. You know, we don't really know what happens in banks. It's a game of trust, which implies that we don't know everything, or we know very little. But in this case, since the 2008 crisis, and especially during the European debt crisis in 2010, 2012, certain measures were put into place, which make it even more difficult for us to see what is happening in European banks. But there is no such powers in the EU to kind of, they don't have these war powers to stop us from knowing what is happening in the banks. It has such restrictions have come already before. And of course, the European Central Bank is central in this.
So where does all the money go? It's clear Trump wants to devalue the dollar. He might have replaced the Fed chairman this week. I don't know. Is that why everyone is talking about gold? And bizarrely also about US equities, because you're kind of implying the euro is going to face difficulty then this year.
Yeah, well, the euro has been, how would I put it? It's been in problems for quite some time. For some reason, investors seem to trust it, and it has become something of a second reserve currency. But generally, people do not understand how fragile the European Union actually is. Every single nation, basically member nation, could just stop applying their laws, they issue directives. I would say that almost every single Supreme Court in every country in Europe could just announce or would announce if asked that constitution goes over these directives. And if the EU would come into question, then of course would the euro. So euro is kind of...
I don't think Christine Lagarde is really in a position, is she, given her past, to start questioning sovereign banks in Western European countries.
Well, she's a convicted financial criminal. So, yeah,
exactly.
I don't have a deeper answer to that at this point.
Exactly. Although she didn't go to prison. I mean, on top of all of this economic data, I mean, I don't know whether you felt that resistance groups in the Middle East have been remarkably quiet after and amidst the continuing Gaza genocide. What happens when they're piled on top of the economic crisis? You have some resurgence of asymmetric terror liberation movement, Middle Eastern liberation movement, reacting to the EU's continuous support for Israel during this genocide. And you throw that into the mix as well, mass casualty events in Western Europe.
Well, yeah, that's possible. But what we worry about in the Middle East is the wider conflict between, or the reignition of the war between Israel and Iran, which would bring into question the role of Strait of Hormuz, through which one third of all gas and one third of all oil used in the world goes through. So if there would be a major crisis, a war between Israel and Iran, the Strait of Hormuz could be closed and we would have an energy crisis of epic proportions. So we concentrate on these big threats, basically. And this is what we worry about currently.
Just as those Western European think tanks thought that somehow Zelensky could defeat the Russian Federation, they're all saying that Iran is bluffing about the closure of the Straits of Hormuz because it's threatened this so many times before. And of course, it has lost powerful allies in this region.
No, it's a nuclear option. They have all the means to close it. So it's just, if push would come to shove, I'm sure they would do it. It would hurt them also. But if the very existence of Iranian leadership of Iran as a state would come into question, I'm sure they would do it. But I think that President Trump does not want to go there. So there is a backstop here, I think, in the U.S.
I better interrupt you there and say we better be careful here, because by the time this is being broadcast, millions of people all around the world, they may be watching on their screens the effects of the arrival of this carrier freight from the Caribbean for what Rubio and Lindsey Graham want.
But we have been saying this all along, since even during the 12-day war, that they will not. It's not in the interest of the U.S. president to let the Strait of Hormuz to be closed. An iron holds the card. So it's a, it's something. Even if we would go into another war, it's almost like a scenario that it will be stopped before the Strait of Hormuz comes into play. In the worst case scenario, it comes into play, and then we're all screwed. But we consider to think that the U.S. president will stop the escalation before it gets there. It's a delicate mix, I admit, but this continues to be our forecast, just because the closing of the Strait of Hormuz would be so cataclysmic for the world economy.
Yeah, and certainly a catastrophic for the GCC here and BRICS more generally. Africa, trying to be optimistic for 2026, do you think it'll benefit from these collapsing economies in Western Europe? I mean, the lack of Francophone power has already benefited Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Chad, Central African Republic. I mean, we've had obviously Trump bombing Nigeria over the past few weeks. But are they sort of leaving it alone as the United States clearly tries to enforce power in their so-called backyard leaves Europe to get on with its catastrophic war?
To be honest, I'm not really informed about recent developments in Africa, because they are not crucial for the world economy in a sense. But let's assume that there would be this kind of cataclysmic events in the Western Hemisphere, or even China and the South China Sea. Surely Africa could find its place, or could be invigorated as a result. But Africa is a continent which future is very difficult to forecast, because every promise they seem to have also seems to fail, and that's also reason of because of what Europeans did there a few hundred years ago. But yeah, but that's not really what we are looking at now.
We began by talking about the context of the so-called deep state in Washington politics. I mean, do you believe that the United States does have increased leverage? I mean, we know that Obama kidnapped Aristide in Haiti, but because of the successful kidnapping of the Venezuelan president and his wife, do they feel more empowered than usual? I mean, I don't know what you feel about it, but some believe that there was an assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin in the past month or so, that drone attack.
Yeah, it's possible. Of course, the Russians, they didn't fall for it. That what I read is that Vladimir Putin was moved, or he moved to another location, so he was not even there where he was allegedly targeted. But I think what happened in Venezuela was a beautifully executed play, a charade, to enforce or create this image of an all and powerful U.S. military, like the strike in the Iran's nuclear facility in Hormuz. It's just like, I've been trying to dig out what has happened there, and you cannot get any information on that.
The 40 kilos of nuclear material.
Yeah.
Was it 400 kilos?
I don't remember what's the actual, but the point is that we cannot get any decent or reliable information from there, which implies that there was a deal between Iran and the U.S. to stop the war, which was becoming way too expensive for Israel, and even started to threaten the very existence of Israel. So we are being told many narratives currently by the mainstream media on the powerfulness of Israel, the U.S. and all, but it's a facade which has been presented to us, basically. So it's just, we're being led through lies to something sinister, probably, which I don't really have the ability to forecast at this hour. But we are in the path which is not looking good. Also, because we are returning to the power politics. We haven't seen, honestly, since the beginning of 20th century, like before the Second World War. Well, those who had power dictated the borders in the world. I don't think people really understand what does it mean if U.S. takes Greenland by force, for example. It implies return of power politics and the end of United Nations and the kind of the supranational structure. There's a long process. Why did we get into this point, which culminates in the failure?
Well, obviously, there's some people who say that power politics never went away in many countries of the global south.
Yeah, but this is the catch. This is the catch. The power politics never went away, but it was stable because there was two opposing forces, the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union went away, we are just seeing a kind of a
mass murder.
Well, of course, but the unleash of the aims of Washington over the globe. This is where we are, and it started from the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Professor Tuomas Malinen, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences, of course, to those suffering US, UK, EU armed genocide across Palestine. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.